Beach easy.
Once we decided I was going to see if he needed some help, extra help, I went on to BabyNet. By the time we got him approved, there was only like 2-3 weeks before he turned 3 years old. So once he turned 3, they put him in Horry County School for like a pre-education, pre-K type program. And after 1 month, the teacher called me and was like, I need to get him tested for autism. I broke down big time. I sat down and I started crying. So then my dad comes out and he's like, what happened? Because I'm crying. I didn't even know anything about autism at the time either. So anyway, I told my dad what happened, and he's, you know, he hugged me and he says, I know you're really upset right now, but crying is not going to help you. You need to pick yourself up and figure out how you're going to help him.
Welcome to Life's a Beach and Then You Die. From personal growth and self-discovery to challenges and victories, we discuss it all. Join us as we dive into the extraordinary stories of ordinary people all the way to the end.
Welcome to Life's a Beach and Then You Die. I'm Julie, and today I'm with Jamie Descalis. Jamie is owner of Johnny D's Waffles, a cookbook author, and voted best chef in Myrtle Beach. She's also a mother and autism advocate. Though she lives in Myrtle Beach now, she grew up in Middletown, New York.
Well, like you said, we grew up in Middletown, New York. Since I was born, my dad had already been in restaurants. He bought his first restaurant when he was 19. I think the Hills Diner, it was called, in New Jersey. And then he met my mom shortly after that, and they moved to Middletown, New York, and opened up what was then the Forum Diner. Then they, I think a year or so later, they had my brother. And that's it. We started growing up in the restaurants. I mean, I don't remember when I remember at what age, but like I still remember like running behind at the Forum Diner, the register back there, and like stealing the candy bars that they had behind the register. So I was little.
Yeah.
And it was always in everyone's way. But
did they put you to work early doing anything?
I mean, we didn't actually work till we were 13. We started. But when we were younger, we were just there because my mom and dad didn't have any options as far as, you know, childcare. So they went to the restaurants. That's why we literally grew up inside the restaurants, which I guess there's good and bad things to that because, you know, I was always around a lot of older people. Mm-hmm. And, you know, everyone would just have conversations, or, you know, and I would hear probably a lot of things a young person's not supposed to hear.
Yeah.
And I got exposed to lots of different types of people over the years from a young age, which I think was good. I mean, I guess you could say like maybe I heard some things too young too, but in the aspect like I was able to learn a lot early about human behavior and stuff like
that. Yeah.
So I learned a lot about what life is like in the real world early. So like when I turned 18 or 19, when I got out there, I was not surprised by any means, like what was happening. So I guess, I mean, in that aspect, I had a really good jump start because I already knew a lot of what to expect once I moved out of my parents' house and stuff like that.
Jamie grew up in the hustle and bustle of restaurants. She always thrived in that environment, but growing up, she struggled in school. Things were just harder for her there, especially in high school.
I got teased a lot in high school. So that was, it just made me, I think I went into my adult life insecure because of it.
What were they teasing
you? It was just, I was too loud. I had too much energy. I was too much. I had like, you know, I was Greek. I'm Greek, 100% Greek. So I had like upper lip hair. I was young. It showed up young, you know.
Yeah.
And they were like, it wasn't so much. It was more like middle school with that, like the teasing with that. And then in high school, I just never really felt like I fit in. You know, I wasn't really the girly type. And then I was more tomboyish. And, you know, now I'm gay. Came out of the closet a few years ago. But
did you know that then?
I didn't. And I think that's a lot of the reason I didn't really understand and my sexuality at that time. So I think through high school, I struggled a lot because I didn't really fit in with the girls. But, you know, I wasn't a guy.
Yeah.
So it was kind of hard. And I didn't have very many girlfriends. I had a few, but very small, tight knit. But there was always like the popular girls that I always felt like were just any time that they could, they just a little bit, you know, chip at me, you know, for whatever the reason was. So I feel like the experience of high school was like the biggest dramatic thing that happened to me. And not even because of the people teasing me, just the whole system. Like, yeah. It was hard for me because I can't, like you said, I can't sit still. I don't know why I'm getting teary-eyed a little bit. Excuse me.
Well, you said it, though. Let me take a... I mean, you don't real. Sometimes we undergo trauma and we don't even realize it. Do you think that the fact that your parents were they preoccupied and busy all the time? Do you feel like you were kind of left on your own? I'm not trying to paint them as like...
No. I mean, maybe a little bit, but also, like, I never came home and was like, hey, mommy, daddy, this is what's happening to me at school. And if I would have done that, like, you know, I could have talked to them about it, but I never did. They didn't. My mom didn't know anything about it until I told her recently.
Wow. Did you hold it in?
I just held it in because I was embarrassed. I didn't really want to talk about it.
Yeah.
So, you know, that really, like, and then as I got older and I tried to figure out, like, where are my insecurities from? What, you know, why I have trouble with this? Like, and it just all stemmed back to just the whole high school experience, really. I was so happy to graduate and, like, go to work and start my life.
Yeah.
And even when I went to college, it was better at college. And because college, I went to school for baking. I was up. I was doing things. I didn't have to sit in a chair all day.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
It was very hands-on learning. I'm good with hands-on learning. I'm not good with book learning.
Yeah.
So school, I felt like the way school is, I was set up to fail anyway. So it was a big struggle for me. I mean, I got decent grades. I got good grades. I didn't fail anything.
Yeah.
But, like, it was just a struggle going every day, getting up in the morning.
Though high school was a struggle, it was there that she met Mike. Her relationship with Mike is an important part of Jamie's story.
I met him when we were in high school. And then we started dating right after high school.
Yeah.
But I had we were friends, and I always thought he was cute. He had a cute face. He had a really cute face. But he was funny. And back then, you know, I had no idea that I, you know, actually prefer to be with women. So, and I didn't, you know, he was cute and he was nice. And, but also I didn't have, you know, I didn't have a lot of self-esteem too. So, like, when he took interest in me, I was very interested because I went through high school not being very interested with me.
Yeah.
But I mean, we were cute when we were younger, you know, it was new. I was really excited. We hung out. We spent all the time together. We spent, like, every day together for months and months and months and months. God, I remember I don't even remember how long it was that we didn't, like, see each other one day. I feel like I got attached at that point because I still didn't even know who I was. And then, you know, I went from high school being very insecure, not knowing who I was, right into this relationship that ended up being – it turned into marriage.
Yeah. How long did you date before you married?
3 years, I think. And then we got engaged. And then I was married by 20, almost 21 and a half, 22.
Wow.
So from 17
young.
To – yeah, so we got married young. And then we were both hanging out a lot with friends. And we were, of course, at that age, we were going to the bars and stuff like that with other couples and single friends and stuff like that. So until I got pregnant with James, like, we spent a lot of my – I drank a lot in my 20s, to be honest. Not like I had an issue or anything, but – sometimes I think back now at how much I drank in my 20s and I'm a hungover thinking about it. Like, it was so much. And I don't know, like, we were going out, like, the bars and stuff, and I don't really know what that was really about.
Well, it's part, like, of our culture, though. I mean, I did it. Like,
I mean, I just, but, like, and also, like, because I went from high school and went straight into a relationship with him, I didn't have time to, like, have a few crazy years. So we kind of, like, and him too, because we were together. So we were just drinking a lot in our 20s. And then I had trouble getting pregnant. And when I, obviously once I did, like, everything changed after that. And then when I hit 30, you know what happens when you hit 30 when you drink? Hangover starts lasting 2 days.
Yeah.
So now I'm at the point that I don't drink anything.
Were you married when you moved to the beach?
Yes. But I remember we came down to visit one day and we just loved it down here.
Yeah.
So then we went home, packed, and 6 months later we came down, opened Johnny D's. So it was me, him, and my dad in there at the beginning, and that was rough. Not the move, just working with my husband and my dad.
Oh.
I sometimes felt like I was in the middle, you know, a little bit. Like, if they had, they didn't have really disagreements like that, but once in a while, you know, it was like, well, I can't really pick sides, guys, so I'm going to need you to agree on something.
Yeah.
What do you want me to do?
Somebody back off.
I need someone to back off, you know, and that was a little bit hard, but me and Mike had a little struggle sometimes working together. You know, sometimes we would fight at the restaurant, which I hated.
Yeah.
Or we try to be private. But, like, you could tell, like, everyone could tell when we were not vibing with each other.
Right.
And I think working together did take a toll on us as well. Yeah. But it wasn't all, it's not like I can't blame him. I can't blame me, but like I wasn't very good at communicating back then at all. So yeah. like I had a hard time even expressing to him what I wanted for him right. to even be able to do it,
yeah.
you know, or be able to make any changes or anything like that. So we struggled sometimes. We had poor communication and a lot of it was my fault. I think he was probably better at communicating than I was.
Yeah.
If he had an issue, he would tell me where I would like to store it in a little filing cabinet. And then obviously it explodes and everything yeah. comes out all at once. And it comes out not in a way that anyone wants to listen to it because you're screaming or yelling or really mad or hostile.
Right.
So it's hard for the person that you're trying to get your message across to even, they go on a defensive right away.
Yeah.
So that was happening a lot. At some point in our relationship, I started noticing little things about myself that like was making me like turn my head to women. And then no matter what me and Mike would have done, it would have been ended the same.
Right.
You know, it would have ended with that.
Yeah.
Because I
so you didn't even realize that till
I didn't realize
marriage.
That until I mean, I was still married when I realized it, but you know, and I try to like sweep it under the rug and stuff like that, but it ended up coming to a head.
Right.
And that's when I left him and started a new relationship with the woman that ended up
yeah.
making me decide like it's time for me to go.
Jamie's and Mike's marriage was never going to last. But that relationship and experience gave Jamie her greatest blessing, her son James. But she quickly noticed that he was different than other children.
I started noticing in New York before we moved down here. He was like 2 and he had some words, but then he lost them. And, you know, I went to the doctor and I was like, you know, he's not talking yet. He had some words. He lost them. It kind of boggles my mind that the doctor I saw at the time just didn't even know one little thing to mention, like autism. Like when I think back, I'm like, do they not cover it in school? Like I like
well, and it
I,
wasn't the 70s. Or
it,
60s
no, it was is, 12 years ago. Like yeah, it wasn't like it exactly. wasn't like 30. So, you know, I was like, is it possible that, you know, my grandmother at the time was watching Milan. She spoke a lot of Greek to him. That was her first language. So I was like, is it possible that he's getting confused with the language? And he's like, no, then he should just be like, kids can just do both. Still not saying like, well, let's get him tested. Just very blown offish. So then I think that kind of made me feel like a little bit, well, like the doctor doesn't seem like there's anything wrong. Like, we'll just wait.
Yeah.
Well, then between his age of 2 and 3, we moved down here. So his birthday's in March. We moved down here in January. He started daycare very quickly when mm-hmm. we moved down here.
Yeah.
Within a few weeks of daycare, they must have noticed. So then, you know, daycare was like pulled me into the office and they were like, we would like you to get his hearing checked. He's not really responding. We would like a note from the doctor or note from you saying that like, because he was only eating like, he was very picky eater. He was only eating a few things. And that's another thing. He was eating more foods and then he started regressing and it got to the point that he was eating like Fruit Loops and French fries.
Oh.
So the daycare didn't like that either because they yeah. didn't want to come in and like an audit or something and see that everyone is eating foods and he's eating Fruit Loops day after day after day. So they had some concerns, but they weren't telling me like, we want you to get him tested for autism. I don't know if it's beyond their pay grade or what, you know?
Yeah.
So I went to a hearing and me at the time, I was like, what are you guys talking about? He can hear fine. I was like, James, he turned his head immediately.
Yeah.
I was like, you see? I was like, what? And I was like, whatever. We got his hearing checked perfectly fine. Still nobody
wow.
said anything. He was in baby. He once we decided I was going to see if he needed some help, extra help. I went on to BabyNet. By the time we got him approved, there was only like 2-3 weeks before he turned. I think it was 3 years old. And then he has to go into like Horry County schools. Like BabyNet is for from age, whatever, 18 months to 3 years, I think. I might be wrong, but. So once he turned 3, they put him in Horry County school for like a pre-education, pre-K type program. And after 1 month, the teacher called me and was like, I need to get him tested for autism.
Mm. What was that call like for you? What happened in your brain?
I broke down big time. Like after I was fine on the phone.
Yeah.
But then I remember I was outside the restaurant, the Myrtle Beach door, and I sat down and I started crying. And Mike came out and he's like, what's wrong? And I told him what happened. That the, you know, teacher just called this and that. So then my dad comes out and he's like, what happened? Because I'm crying. I didn't even know anything about autism at the time either. So anyway, I told my dad what happened and he's, you know, he hugged me and he says, I know you're really upset right now, but crying is not going to help you. You need to pick yourself up and figure out how you're going to help him. And I was like, you're right, daddy, you're right. So, you know, obviously I've cried many times since, you know, and not because he has, I don't care that he has autism. He's healthy. That's all I care about.
Right.
So him being healthy is all I cared about. But like, I didn't understand autism. I didn't understand what that meant. I knew that he wasn't talking yet. I knew that he wasn't eating. Like, he wasn't properly nourished, obviously, because of it. So that's where it just scared me, because like, I didn't even know how to help him. I knew nothing.
The initial fear after James was diagnosed was difficult, but Jamie quickly rallied. She got him feeding and speech therapy. She began working to understand how to best help her son and has come to a good place with him and with autism.
I can't spend time right now stressing about what might be in the future.
Right.
I work with him now, make sure I talk to him as much as I can, coach him through what he's like, instead of it paralyzing me, I'm so stressed, I don't know what the future looks like. I'm trying to work with him now to teach him the skills, use that energy instead of stressing to teach him the skills that he needs so that he could be successful. Because who am I to say what his success can be like? Right. Like, who am I to put a ceiling on it?
Right.
Because he's come so far. I mean, he used to eat Fruit Loops and French fries only. No water and juice. He had the worst diet. He eats better than most adults now. He eats his vegetables. He loves proteins. He eats so well.
I was going to ask you if you have him on a diet, because certainly like the dyes and stuff. And yeah,
but he doesn't even want any of that
so
stuff
bad,
because he's on such a good diet. He doesn't. Yeah. He likes Hershey's chocolate. He asks for three cookie snack, like his Chips Ahoy cookies. He likes. He always says three cookies. Like, I want three cookies. But like, other than that, he has an excellent diet. He drinks so much water. But that was all something like I worked with him. So instead of, you know, I took him to feeding therapy for almost a whole year. And at first I was like, how is this even going to work? Like, the way that they were like playing with the food, that they would like put the blueberry on his hand and then put the blueberry on his forearm and then on his shoulder and then like touch the lips with it. And I'm like, what am I sitting here for? But I was like, Jamie, just trust the process, because you know nothing.
Yeah.
So these people, professionals. Dated him. They're my blessing. I'll never. That 1 year we spent in feeding therapy was like a life changer for him. But they did an excellent job over there. So I had already trusted them with speech. You know, he already went there for speech. So I was like, just sit there and just trust the process. And I did. Then, you know, then they got him to like try the blueberry. I remember texting Mike at the time. I'm like, he just tried a blueberry. And then I'd be like, he just tried a zucchini. And Mike's like, no, he didn't. I said, oh my God. I said, now he just put chicken in his mouth. I'm like, I'm texting him. I'm like, I swear he just put chicken in his mouth. So then when he would have success with something at feeding therapy, like blueberries, I would go home all week and work with him with blueberries.
Yeah.
You know, and I would cut a piece of one blueberry in four pieces. And sometimes it would take him 2 hours to eat five blueberries.
Oh, wow.
But I never gave up on him. I would give him a piece of blueberry. And then after he'd eat it, I'd give him a piece of goldfish. Then he would have another blueberry. Then I'd give him goldfish. Then it was two pieces of blueberry, one goldfish, three pieces of blueberry. And then, you know, I would go back a week or two later. I'm like, he's eating blueberries now. And then it was the same process. Any food that they had success with over there, even getting him to put it in his mouth, I went home separately from dinner. So like, I would work on the blueberries before dinner, like upstairs privately, but like try not to, you know, and I wouldn't force him. Like, I would give him the blueberry. I would not sit there and watch him. Let, you know, walk away, and I'd come back, check, see if he ate the blueberry, give him a piece of, I mean, this, some nights I was up there for 2 hours. It was like, I did not give up. I was like, I need him to eat. But it got to the point at speech therapy that he didn't eat it anymore. And I remember we had to take a break. Oh, his speech therapist decided to leave. His feeding therapist decided to leave. And at that time, you know, we had a conversation like, well, he's doing so well. Like, would you be okay if he was done? And because we have other kids that are like failing to thrive because they have no nutrition. Mm. And I was like, I can take it from here. And he eats everything now.
Jamie and James both get support from Mike. Though their marriage didn't last, their family has.
Like, we co-parent so well together. Good. We have not gotten into an argument since we got divorced. We can talk about anything. If something's bothering him, he can come and tell me about it. If something's bothering me, I can come tell him about it. You know, regarding James or something, or me and him, like the way we need to communicate, if we need to change something. We've changed a few times, like, you know, our agreement, like our original agreement towards James, and we've just talked about it. We didn't need a lawyer to like separate, hash it out for us or anything. So that was because I told him, like, when we were getting divorced, I was like, we have argued so much. Like, I don't want to argue with you anymore. I'm tired. Yeah. So even in a divorce, I was like, what do you want to make this easier for you? And he had to start over. Me and my dad kept the restaurants. He had to start over. So I was like, what do you want? to make this easier for you.
Yeah.
Like, I'm not here to attack you. I'm not here to fight with you. I'm not here to ruin you. I understand that you have to start over. So tell me what you want. And we, you know, we settled all the divorce stuff easily. And he, you know, was able to, you know, build what he has built, and he's remarried now. And
he's still in the
area.
Yeah,
they're still in the area. And yeah. the three of us co-parent very well. I don't want to leave her out.
Oh, wonderful.
He's remarried. She's wonderful. She has kids of her own from previous relationship.
Is that good for James?
They love James, and he love, you know, plays with them well.
Oh,
and,
nice.
So, and I don't have anybody else at the house. It's just me and James. So I do like that he has that interaction with, you know, brothers and sisters and stuff, you know, if they're not biologically his brother's sister. So I'm really grateful for the relationship me and Mike have, and Jen too as well.
It's pretty wonderful how things that seem so terrible when you're like going through them, out okay.
Yeah, but like we were just tired of being at each other's at first it was hard, but I like even at some point he even told me like this is better. Like it was hard at first, but this is better. Like he's happy, you know, he's happier to be with someone that really can give her, you know, be with him. Me, at some point I realized I liked girls, and it was hard for me. It was hard for me after that.
Right.
Because I was trying, I couldn't be like his wife, I guess.
Yeah.
That he, you know, anyone would deserve him. Deserve, right. Because I was halfway out the door.
Though Jamie is in a great place now, the road to get there wasn't easy. So much of her life changed, discovering her sexuality, learning how to understand her own ADHD. That kind of growth is always uncomfortable in the beginning.
I was married for 15 years to my husband, to my ex-husband. And then after that, I went straight into a relationship with a woman. That lasted about 4 years. But that was like 18 and a half years that I had been in a relationship. So when I got together with my ex-husband, I was 17.
Wow.
And when I was finally single for the first time, I was 34, 35.
Yeah.
And I found myself in a really weird place, because I just feel like I spent 18 years stressed. And it's not to blame my partners. I had a lot of to deal with personally inside. Yeah. I didn't know myself. I went from one relationship to the other. I never had time to live on my own or get to know myself, what I wanted, expectations for myself and other people that I'm with. I just didn't have any time to like lay that out for myself.
Yeah.
So when finally I found myself alone for the first time in my adult life, I was like, well, I really don't know what to do now. I was very like sick from my breakup. Sad, but at the same time, I was done too, so it was fine.
Yeah.
So I was like sick every day. So I remember I went to Loleo Juice Bar. I walked in because I was following on Facebook, and I started getting juices every day. And I was basically juicing. I was eating still a little bit, but like my stomach was like a knot. Like I was struggling so much with anxiety at the time. Like I could barely get out of bed in the morning. And I was selling my house at the time, so I had to pack that up and move into a new place. I remember when I moved into my new place and I got everything packed up, it was about 3 weeks later after my breakup. And I was like,
yeah.
Like I got everything settled. I sat on the couch and it was like, and then sometime that summer, I went to the doctor for ADHD to get diagnosed with ADHD. Okay. And so it was like a couple months after my breakup. And the reason why I even thought to go, as I started seeing videos on TikTok that they were like playful videos that was like life in the day of someone with ADHD. Then I started seeing more videos like that, or actually like more therapists talking about ADHD, or people having more serious conversations about ADHD. And I was like, I think I have ADHD. I'm like, I'm going to go to the doctor.
Yeah.
And then I went to see my regular doctor, and she's like, you know, gave me a therapist to go speak to. I made an appointment. And the therapist, within 5 minutes, she's like, well, based on just talking to you for 5 minutes, I'm going to do this test. But for sure, you're going to, you know, come up test. I'm going to tell you have ADHD. So she asked me all a bunch of questions, you know, did her math over there. And for sure, as we already knew, ADHD.
After getting her initial diagnosis, Jamie began working on herself. She found ways to manage her ADHD through health and exercise, even leaning on some of the same techniques she used with her son's autism.
I have been just a lot happier overall. And you know, my employees have seen the big transition with me because they're around me every day.
Yeah.
And a lot of them that have worked for me for a long time, like, remember the irritable, uptight, control freak version of me.
Yeah.
You know, you'd have to maybe walk on eggshells a little bit around me sometimes because I just was just tense all the time. And you didn't know, like, if I wasn't as approachable as I am now.
Yeah.
So some of them working a long time, you know, when I started, like, not getting as upset about things and they were looking at me, like, waiting for me to, like, get mad like I used to. And I'm like, guys, it's fine. Don't worry about it. And I be the one to be like, listen, don't worry about it. Like, it's fine. You don't have to be upset. And they're looking at me like, what's going on here? Like,
you're right. Usually,
you're usually the one that is upset. So it's just been nice. And then I don't remember exactly when I read my first article about the hip flexors, but it was after my ADHD diagnosis, but before I started at the fitness studio that I go to now. So because when I started at the fitness studio because then I got to the point where my little home workouts that I was doing, I wanted more. Like, yeah. I started feeling so amazing that I started wanting to build muscle. Like, I moved past the point where I just wanted to be skinny. Like, right. You know, like, women always trying to be skinny.
Yeah.
Somewhere along my ADHD diagnosis, eating better and getting, like, in a better place, like, mentally, and, like, started eating better foods and stuff, I just got to the point that I'm like, I want to take up more space. Like, I want to be bigger.
Yeah.
So then I wanted to grow muscle and learn, you know, and like, I was learning so much about the hip flexors and the different muscle groups from whatever I could from the internet that I started at the studio and have a trainer. And she really helped me with, like, my mindset and kind of, like, anytime I came into work a little bit down or negative, like, she would ask me what's wrong. And then sometimes when I had to explain myself, hearing it out loud, I'm like, you put yourself in a bad mood because of that.
Yeah, exactly.
You know what I mean? Like, yeah. It was like she was holding me accountable, but not in a way that I even really noticed until I started having to say, like, oh, I got upset because so-and-so did this today. And she's like, well, is that something that you can control? And I was like, no. She's like, well, why are you spending time upset with it? And I'm like, well, that's a good question.
Yeah. No, everybody needs to learn those lessons. And you know? Great?
So then it was just slowly like a ripple effect. But when I started feeling better physically, that, like, I was in so much pain and it was creating such a negative version of myself. And, like, I was, you know, able to control it a little bit better because I, you know, I don't know, like, I can't even believe the person I used to be, like, on the inside. And yeah. I'm not saying, like, I was a bad person, but, like, how I felt so sick every day and had so much anxiety. And, like, I mean, answering an email would cause anxiety. I mean, yeah. Everything was causing me anxiety. I just, it was like, and I thought that was normal. I thought that's how everybody lived.
Right.
Because I was so used to, that's how I was every day.
Yeah.
Jamie had found herself and was thriving, but her life was tipped upside down once again when her father and co-owner of Johnny D's got sick.
He was having a lot of back pain and he was going to get CT scans and MRIs and stuff and they didn't find anything. They took his gallbladder out. They said it was a gallbladder problem. That did not help. Then finally, he was really pushing for another scan. And the doctor at the time was like, you don't need another scan. Like, what do you want to do this for? Like, the insurance won't pay for it. He's like, I will pay for it. I want another scan. And then the doctor had to come in from that scan and tell him it was stage 4 pancreatic cancer. And the doctor didn't even know what to say. So they found, and I don't know why the other scans didn't show it. This, it wasn't the first scan. I don't know if it literally progressed that quickly, but that summer he was having a lot of back pains. He was taking a lot of ibuprofen.
And you said he had had a back issue from...
Yeah, he had a back
issue. So he probably assumed it was just...
It could have been. He could have had, like, you know, it could have been a hip flexor issue. You know, it could have been...
Yeah.
I mean, he was doing a lot of stretching at the time, but when you have tight muscles, stretching is the worst thing you can do for it. You need to do mobility. You need to loosen them. You need to build strength. And then you stretch them at the end so they have a little relaxation. So, like, if he was having back issues and tight muscles and he was stretching, he was actually making it worse. It feels better in that moment, but it's actually making it worse. So, he was taking a lot of ibuprofen, so that might have not helped. You know, I don't know, you know, where all that breakdown is, but could be, and a lot of stress over his life, a lot of cortisol. You know, cortisol, we all know where that leads to. Mm-hmm. And then, he started chemo, and it just, by the fourth, and it was very aggressive chemo, but I think by the fifth session, it messed him up. And then the liver started having trouble. I mean, he was diagnosed in August or September and he died in April.
Oh, wow.
So.
Where were you when he told you that he had that diagnosis?
I was leaving my mom's house and he called me because we were supposed to remodel. He just got diagnosed with cancer, stage 4, and the doctor told him he probably had like 6 to 8 months left. He called me to tell me that because we were supposed to go to the architect that week to do new drawings to remodel the Myrtle Beach store. We were thinking about starting fresh, building a whole new building or extending the building, something. So he called me to apologize that he really feels like we should hold off on that right now and that maybe we can go in a couple weeks because this just happened to him. The doctor just told, and he like didn't really want to tell me the whole thing at first. Mm. So then I had to like start asking questions and like pry it out of him over the phone. So, cause I was like, so what do you tell me of cancer? Like, I was like, Daddy, I don't care about remodeling the Myrtle Beach store right now. That's what you're worried about, you know? And so anyway, he really didn't stand a chance, long story short. And then he didn't want the customers to know either. So he was at the restaurants for a little while, but once he started losing weight from the chemo and being sick, he didn't want to go anymore because people started being like, Johnny, you okay? Like, you lost a lot of weight since the last time I saw you. So then he just didn't want to go anymore. But he deteriorated so quickly from the point that he really didn't want to go anymore. He just couldn't go anymore.
Was he in a lot of pain?
I don't know. He didn't talk about it as much.
He seems like the tough guy that would kind of hold it back. But did you talk to him about how he felt about dying in the process or what happens after you die? Anything like that?
We didn't have those conversations. First, he was very like, I'm going to get better. But at the same there was one conversation because my dad was always busy a lot. And we talked about business a lot. But there was one time at my mom's house. I think he was still going to the restaurants. It was towards the end. I was on my phone trying to write emails. And he started asking me questions like how me and my girlfriend at the time were, some investments I had made. And meanwhile, I was like doing this email. And like I kept stopping on the email to like answer his questions. So I don't know, by like the fourth question, I was like, oh, he like actually wants to talk to me right now. I put my phone down and we talked. I don't know how long we talked, for like an hour. We talked about so much stuff in that hour. Like, he asked me about, like, personal stuff in my relationship at the time. He was just – it was one of the best conversations we ever had. Mm. And I do wish we had more. We had more like that. But it was just – I'm really glad we had that conversation. And then another conversation I remember when we had to start talking about, like, what happens if he doesn't make it, you know, business-wise. We needed to have that conversation. So that conversation I remember specifically, and he told me that he's very sorry that I was going to have to take on all this stress now, because it is a lot some days, you know, all the restaurants. And like, you know, and then it was like I kind of stepped into like the rain, so to speak. Like, I don't look at it that way between, you know, my family, we all do it together. But like ultimately at the end of the day, if someone has to make a decision, like it's me, you know. So he just was like, I'm so sorry that all this now is going to be on you. I won't be here to help you. And, you know, we spent – it was our main office time. We were in there crying for a minute, to be honest. And that was, like, the first time he actually talked about, like, what if it doesn't work out, you know? What if he doesn't get better? And this was, like – we were still kind of hopeful at the time because, you know what? The cancer did get better, but the liver started.
Oh.
The cancer shrunk by half, and the doctors were shocked. But that last chemo treatment that he did messed up the liver, and it wasn't working properly. And then after that, he started having other issues. So for a moment, like when we got the call that the cancer had shrunk, we were like, oh my God. And then within like no time, the liver started. Yeah. And we were like, it was like a crash from like that hopefulness, you know?
But, and when was the last time you saw him? Where did he pass? Was he in the hospital or at home?
We saw him in the morning. The day that I saw him, I talked to him a little bit in the morning, the day that he passed, and he passed that night. My mom called me
to
tell me, and I went at his, he died their house. So when I went there that night, and that image is forever in my brain, but, he did go at least peacefully that night, and, his best friend was around him, so that was nice.
He was young too, right?
So
he's just in his 60s. Shoot. Did you have a chance in those days leading up to tell him anything you needed to tell him? Did you tell him you loved him?
I told you know, every time I saw him, But like, you know, that morning, I think we were talking about business stuff. Yeah. That's what he wanted to do. Like, we just, wherever he led the conversation, that's where we took it. Like,
yeah,
you know, and I remember the morning he passed away, we were talking, he said, always take care of the customers. He really did love the customers. He really loved all his customers.
Well, I was going to ask you how his legacy plays then into the way you run your businesses and treat people now. And it sounds like you just answered that.
Yeah, we always take care of the customers, you know. And we don't always get it right. And sometimes we can't get it right for a single individual. You know, it's everyone's different, you know. But I always do what I think is best. We can't make everyone happy, and that's okay. That's why there's so many restaurants, you know?
Do you ever feel his presence when you're in those restaurants making those decisions?
Yeah, we do a lot. And we, you know, we have a joke. We're always like, what would JD do?
Right.
You know? Or if JD was around, you know what he would say? I think he like left behind like something to every person that came through the restaurants because he spoke to them all. So like he left behind an imprint of how an owner should be. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
I mean, me, I talk to a lot of customers. I don't do it like him. I've had a customer, you know, come in and say, you know, no one comes around and talks like, you know, your dad, like he wasn't even complaining. He was just saying that like your dad used to come around the tables like a certain way. And I was like, I know. I was like, I cannot even do it like the way he used to do it. Sometimes I'm having a bad day and I cannot, my amount of people I can talk to has to get shrunk down. Like, I just don't have the mental capacity to do it. He did it no matter what. And like, no, I'm like, well, I can't even do it like him. Like, yeah. I cannot push everything aside some days. I could do it most days, but he did it. So I just feel like he really left an imprint of like how an owner can be to help build his business, like help that customer, like how to make someone going to a restaurant experience instead of just a restaurant that they go to. Like, people come there and they still talk about, really miss your dad. When I met him, he remembered us. They tell me all these things about him.
Yeah.
And it's like really wonderful to hear.
The legacy that her father left inspires Jamie every day. She honors his memory in the way she runs her restaurants and in the way she lives her life. She found herself and honors her happiness while still taking care of her son and her customers.
I just want to tell everyone, like, not to feel selfish putting yourself first.
Right.
Because you can do it without being selfish.
Oh, yeah.
The reason why you put yourself first is because then you take a step back to determine who deserves your energy, where you should put your energy, where your energy is going to be best suited. When you decide to schedule a date with your friend or schedule a play date with your child, you know, a little, you know, I'm taking, you know, at this time, you set that little time for yourself aside. You're like more intentional about the time, the things that you do.
Mm-hmm.
You're more intentional about who you spend your time with. And then you notice you start having more time for everything. You have more time for everything. But when you just are people who try to be, and because I am a people pleaser and I've had to put it under a control, mm-hmm. like in a box and only please, you know, can only please so much.
Yeah. Yes.
Because I would people please myself to death. And it's exhausting when everyone's grabbing. So like if you're constantly around someone and you feel tired after you hang out with them, maybe you should reevaluate that relationship, whatever it may be.
Yeah.
Because I stop hanging out with people that drain me. You know, and it's not, in every conversation, you don't need to know, you know, and remember no response is a response. And no means no. And it means, you know, that's.
And if they wanted to, they would.
If they wanted to, they would. I mean, I know there's certain stipulations, I guess, for that, because some people just can't, but that's, then you need to decide that if they can't, and I'm going. And that could be, you know, could be your a friend relationship, it could be a romantic relationship, it could be a work relationship, you know. Mm-hmm. But we thrive in the, we don't even realize how we thrive in the chaos. And then when things are settled down, we sit around wondering, why are things so calm right now? And that was like one of the things that I had to get used to with my girlfriend now.
Jamie is a champion of protecting her own peace. Her journey is a testament to resilience, self-discovery, and the transformative power of prioritizing physical and mental health.
you've been inspired by this story or any others, please take a moment to subscribe, rate, and review.
We don't just get away at the beach, we get together. Because no matter what floats your boat, we're floating right along with you. With over 2,000 restaurants, live music all day and night, and endless attractions, Myrtle Beach was made for having fun and beaching easy. Welcome to 60 miles where you belong, the beach. Myrtle Beach, South Carolina. Plan your trip at visitmyrtlebeach.com.